Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. What does it take for a city to achieve zero, as in zero waste, zero emissions of toxic waste into air, land, or water? Is it possible? Several cities are working toward this lofty goal. Austin, Texas intends to be waste-free by 2040, and Boston is aiming for carbon neutral and climate ready by 2050. What would it take for a city like Baltimore to join the ranks of those cities, and how would we get there? Later in the show, we'll meet members from United Workers, a nonprofit involved in researching and designing a zero-waste plan for Baltimore that was presented publicly on February 22nd. Joining us now is Gary Liss, a principal member of Zero Waste Associates. He worked with local organizers to create the Baltimore Plan. For more than 40 years, Liss has helped cities, counties, and businesses move toward zero waste, from California and Colorado to New York and New Jersey. He's talking with us by phone from his office near Sacramento, California. Welcome, Gary.
Thank you, Sheila. Pleasure to be here.
First, explain what getting to zero waste means for a city.
Well, zero waste is all about doing reduce, reuse, recycle for real. It means focusing on eliminating wasteful practices as much as possible, setting up reuse systems to recover products rather than throwing them away, and then to recycle and compost all the materials beyond that. So zero waste is all about diverting materials from landfills and incinerators, and the Baltimore Zero Waste Plan provides a framework for how to do that.
Does zero waste always look and feel the same for each city?
No. In fact, Baltimore's plan is actually called the Fair Development Plan for Zero Waste. It's the first one with that broad a scope. Baltimore, the effort was led by United Workers working with the city and lots of other stakeholders to identify what were the concerns of the community and then to develop ways to address those concerns. So Baltimore was much more focused on equity issues, some of the past environmental injustices of having so much of the problems located in South Baltimore. All the landfill and incinerators are located there. And so there was a huge outcry from the public saying, we don't want to be dumped on anymore. We need to see equity treat us equally around the city. And so that's why we got into fair development issues as part of the Zero Waste Plan.
I'd like you to back up a little bit and walk us through how you advise people to design a Zero Waste Plan. Where do you start?
The first step is looking at what your existing situation is. So we went around meeting with people. The city Public Works Department was working on the Less Waste, Better Baltimore Plan at the same time. So we got a lot of information from them as to what the existing system is like. And then we offer options from the best practices from around the country. One of the best resources is a list, a checklist from the Zero Waste USA website. And that provides about 80 or 90 different policies and programs that have been implemented around the country by different cities and highlights options for Baltimore to consider.
Have you worked with cities you see as comparable to Baltimore?
Yes. In size, both Boston and Austin and demographics are similar to Baltimore. In fact, Public Works used those as two of the five comparable cities that they looked at. So we worked on the Zero Waste Plan for Boston just last year, and Austin we worked on about 10 years ago.
And I mentioned at the beginning of the show,
right,
Austin's looking at 2040, Boston at 2050. Where do they stand now?
I would say both of those are making progress. Austin is at about 45 percent of their materials are diverted from landfills and incinerators and the environment, and Boston is about 25%. Other zero-waste communities on the West Coast have been at it much longer, like San Francisco, and a lot of the California communities that have adopted zero-waste are at 70 to 80% diverting from landfills and incinerators and the environment.
That's Gary Liss of Zero Waste Associates here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about what it means for a city to achieve zero waste, no trash, no toxic emissions. You talked about equity issues really driving a lot of the conversation in Baltimore. Are there other special circumstances that Baltimore needs to consider compared to other cities you've worked with?
The incinerator in Baltimore is another major consideration. In many of the communities, we haven't had to deal with those issues. Boston had that as well, but it was a different situation because the incinerator was not located in the city, so they didn't have the same type of potential control and or impact on the incinerator. So in Baltimore, the incinerator being located in the city with a contract for the city to provide materials was another particular challenge for the zero waste planning to figure out how does that fit in. And the conclusion was it doesn't, and that the contract with Bresco, the incinerator, is due to be up the end of 2021, and the plan recommends not continuing that contract.
What other special circumstances did you encounter in Baltimore?
The other that I would highlight is the community has a much broader perspective on the issues of community-based approaches and solutions to some of the worst problems that we identified in the plan, particularly illegal dumping areas in Black and poor communities that have the highest concentration of vacant properties and evictions. And the community has organized already to address those with essentially pilot programs that show the way that could be followed with more support from the city to encourage and support the implementation of community gardens, farms, parks, play areas out of these vacant lots, and to either rehabilitate the vacant buildings or to deconstruct them to keep them from being eyesores and problems.
A lot of what you're talking about is a big behavioral change. What are some of the biggest hurdles in enacting a zero waste plan?
Well, it definitely is a behavioral change, a culture change to get everyone to think differently about what is being discarded. These are really resources. Waste is not a term we even acknowledge. We say it's all about viewing these as commodities, as resources, as materials and products that are just not being handled and managed properly. So the challenge for the culture change is to get people to think that way. And so providing the services easily for people to participate easily and for people to be informed as to how to participate is a good part of it. Housing projects, the public housing projects are an example where they don't even have recycling as an option. So that was an example where we're saying it needs to have recycling and composting services provided to all residents of Baltimore.
But the market for recyclables has dwindled. China, one of the largest consumers of recycled material, is refusing much of U.S. recycling because it isn't clean enough. So in light of that, does a zero waste plan that calls for more intensive recycling make sense?
It was actually a great wake-up call that China has said we're not going to take the materials that you've been sending to us because they're so poorly provided. 30-40% of the materials were having to be thrown away as garbage in China because we weren't paying attention to the details. So recycling mills in the United States, so that we're going to be creating more jobs in the United States, bringing those recycling jobs home from China to the United States. And Baltimore is perfectly positioned to help develop programs within the city and in the region to take recyclables that are collected, particularly if they're quality materials. If you have good quality, clean materials, you can sell your product. And that's the key to recycling today. Cleaning up recycling, recycling right, not doing wishful recycling.
Thank you so much for this conversation. Thanks.
Thank you, Sheila.
Gary Liss is a principal member of Zero Waste Associates. He's based in Sacramento, California. Over the last year, he advised a team of local organizers to help develop a zero waste plan for Baltimore City. Quick break now, and then we'll ask two of those organizers about details of the proposed plan. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about what it takes for a city to reach the goal of zero trash and zero toxic emissions in its air and water. Earlier, we spoke with a consultant who's worked with cities across the country as they design zero waste plans. Now we're joined by two community organizers from United Workers. It's the nonprofit that, along with a coalition of environmental and community groups, researched and drafted Baltimore's Fair Development Plan for Zero Waste and presented it publicly last month. Melanie Thomas is a leadership organizer with United Workers and a board member of the South Baltimore Community Land Trust. Welcome to On the Record, Melanie.
Thank you.
Tarek Thompson is a youth leader with United Workers. Welcome, Tarek.
Thank you.
So, Melanie, first, what is United Workers?
United Workers is a grassroots organization that focuses on issues of fair development, and that includes housing, access to proper housing, decent housing, and also making sure workers' rights are at the forefront. So equity as a whole.
Tarek, how did you get involved with United Workers?
Well, it started as a class, mostly at the high school I graduated from, Benjamin Franklin High School. Mm-hmm. And they talked about things that I've been through, such as things with housing and a lot of health problems. I suffered asthma for a long time. Albuterol was my best friend. But when I realized that these things were connected to mostly the incinerator and in our current system now, I wanted to see if I can change it. And they helped show me that I can make a change, basically, in my community. And ever since then, I wanted to continue, basically.
Melanie, when did work start on Baltimore Zero Waste Plan?
It actually started it with the proposal for a trash burning incinerator to be built in Curtis Bay, another trash burning incinerator. We already have a medical waste incinerator, and then in South Baltimore, we have the Bresco incinerator, which we're here talking about right now. So with that proposal back in 2011, it was a 5-year campaign. And, you know, we were successful in shutting down that proposal for the incinerator. And from then, that was when residents realized that their voice mattered, that the issues and the conditions and the things that we are faced with in our communities, we really had a choice or a say in what goes on and what we weren't going to tolerate any longer. So through that fight, it just kind of just funneled on, like, okay, what else do we need to address now to really undo all the injustice that our communities have faced? And at Benjamin Franklin, we have a class called Participatory Action Research, where we work with high school students in partnership with Towson University on just issues in the community, again, that all address you know, just the unjust conditions that poor Black and brown communities continue to face and are challenged with. So the issue of vacant homes and trash and pollution, healthy food access, and crime and safety. And from there, the youth worked alongside with us in launching, where they launched on March 16th, 2019, the Zero Waste Challenge. And it was a challenge to just get people to be conscious of their contribution to the waste system and to have a good understanding of what we were doing individually and then collectively how it all comes into play and how all of those four things that I mentioned align in the communities.
And so it was last year that you started actually putting specifics down into a plan,
yes,
that could be proposed to city government. What's in the plan? What is the plan?
The plan really looks at just the fear. It's called the Fair Development Plan for Zero Waste. And it's called that because historically disadvantaged Black poor communities are impacted by things that they did not decide to put in their communities. Right. So we have an open air coal pile. We have all of these toxic chemical companies in our communities that continue to contribute to our poor air quality that we have in Curtis Bay. We have one of the worst air qualities in the state. And so once we realized that all of those companies contributed to that, we realized that something had to change.
So one of the things in the plan I read is mission-based recycling. What is mission-based recycling?
Mission-based recycling is really where it's like a company. An example of one is Eureka, which is a company in Minnesota. And what they do, it's not just they have citizens, regular citizens or organizers like Tarek and myself in the community that are on the ground educating people on what they can throw away and how to recycle. So it's not just the collection of services. It's not just putting your stuff out on the curb to be collected, but it's the education part of it. And through that, the funds that they raise then go back into the community. So it's cycled back to the community to really support and uplift the affordable housing for their workers as well as people.
It's not clear to me how they raise funds doing the education.
They want a contract for their state to collect all the recycling. Oh. Just like waste management, here is our big recycler. But they're also, waste management is also, they have contracts with incinerators and landfills as well. You know, and that's where majority of their funds come. So it's a contractual arrangement.
The plan also calls for creating $1 vacant lot program. Why sell vacant lots for a dollar? What does that get at?
It will give a lot of people in the community opportunities to create a lot like we have right now in Curtis Bay. We saw something that was basically a dumping ground and flipped it. And this took a lot of effort, but we turned it into something beautiful. This is something that we go to every day and we care about it a lot. One of our students who's still at Benjamin Franklin now is there today as we speak. And he's making stone pathways. He's making things. He's doing different things with mulch. He's making so many things because he's passionate about the work and he's passionate about the lot itself.
And when properties are vacant in communities, they typically become dumping grounds because when they see that no one is really taking care of the property, then it welcomes trash and, you know, all types of illegal activities. So with making properties affordable for communities like ours that have community land trust, or they may be in a food insecure community and they want to grow fresh fruits and vegetables and may not have green space in their backyards, if they had a vacant lot that was a dollar that they could get and claim and make their own, then they can go out there and really push and show people what's possible when given access to land that otherwise may not be affordable.
That's Melanie Thomas, leadership organizer with United Workers, a nonprofit activist organization, here on The Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Also here is Tarek Thompson, a youth leader with United Workers. We're talking about Baltimore's Fair Development Plan for Zero Waste. Gary Liss, who consulted with you on this zero waste plan. When we spoke with him, he said Baltimore is the first zero waste plan he's seen with such a broad scope and such a focus on equity. Talk about that.
Yeah, so the focus on equity, again, really is because of what historically happens with communities that may not have a high voter turnout or a lot of, you know, people in the high tax bracket. Lower income communities really don't have a say in what goes on. Like right now in Cherry Hill, where Tarek's family lives, they don't have the option of recycling. Recycling should be available to everyone. You know, and this plan really uplifts that our waste system, current waste system that we have. We really need to look at it through the lens of equity, looking at it through the principles of fair development. Is it universal? Does everybody have access to the services? Is there transparency with what's going on? Is there accountability? Is it equitable? We don't want a system that just supports parts of Baltimore. We want one that really would uplift all of Baltimore. And then Brandon Scott's equity program that he passed last year, you know, that calls for all agencies to really have an equity officer within and then look at all of their city budgets or whatever it is that they're the contracts that they're doing and making sure that the equity is at the forefront. So it kind of supports already what city council president is calling for, which is an equity lens where organizations and administrations look at that and make sure that no community or no people are being neglected just because of where they live.
Tarek, you've been involved in trying to get the Wheelabrator incinerator, Baltimore's trash-burning waste-to-energy facility, to close down. That proposal is the first step of the plan. Why is that important to you?
Well, it's very important to me because, one, I live in the South Baltimore community right now, and that's basically where the incinerator is. And I've suffered from asthma. People I know suffer from asthma. And not just asthma, they suffer from a lot of respiratory issues. And this is serious because people are dying. And not only are they suffering from these health issues, they're suffering from the health costs. Bresco costs around $55 million a year in health damages. And with it gone, would mean a lot because this will open a lot to different people because, one, we will create more jobs with this thing being gone, and it would basically have an entire generation of people who didn't have to suffer from anything like this.
So I'm confused about how one gets from this plan to action. Does the city council need to adopt it as the city's
plan? Yeah, that is the so the next step right now, and we're waiting on a date to be finalized, but there will be a city council adoption. They've been working, our zero waste champions, Mary Pat Clark and Ed Reisinger, have been working really diligently in drafting the resolution to be adopted. Then there will be the RFP, the request for proposals, where companies maybe like Eureka or other mission-based recyclers can come and, you know, put their bid in to be able to do the work that needs to be done.
Other next steps happening soon.
Other next steps are really just education and letting people know what's coming down the line, letting people know and getting people ready for the recycling and composting and how to do it effectively. Because with change, you need education in order to make sure that it's implemented properly and that people understand what's going on.
Well, I appreciate your giving us this insight into it. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having us here.
Thank you.
Melanie Thomas is a leadership organizer with the activist organization United Workers and a board member of the South Baltimore Community Land Trust. Tarek Thompson is a youth leader with United Workers. We've got more information about Baltimore's Fair Development Plan for Zero Waste at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you're with us on the record. Join us again tomorrow.
Hey,
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.